Blog Talk Radio.
It is Thursday, April 23rd, 2015, episode 40 of the Hockey Guys Podcast. Yours truly, Hunter Crowther, here with my co-host, Chris Shannon. Chris, the Winnipeg Jets are gone. They are gone. And your Montreal Canadiens have to play another game. What's up with you?
I'm doing good, man. You know, just living in the old South Florida. A little rainy week, so it's a little depressing. But it's 1 out of 5 years that we get this. So taking it in. And, yeah, you're probably the most happy person in Canada that the Winnipeg Jets lost. Canada's team for some people, and you heartless man that hates the Jets. It hurts me because, you know, I love the Canadians, but every Canadian has the right and the honor to respect that franchise because they finally make the playoffs, and you, Hunter Crowther, come in there and do this. It's disheartening to many Canadians, and I want to know, why do you hate the Jets so much?
I don't hate the Jets. Here's my thing with the Jets. I feel like since the Thrashers moved to Winnipeg, there's been this almost obsession and love fest with the media, hockey fans itself, and I feel like there's just too much Canadiana. I think that the problem with Canadian hockey fans is we glorify it. We're way over the top. I mean, if you're in Canada during the World Juniors, I think you're witness to the sheer ridiculousness that Hockey Canada and TSN will put us through. And I feel like the Jets were a microcosm of that. I think they got so much of the fans are so loyal and look how much they love their team. And you know, who made a great point today on his on the Merrick vs. Wyshynski podcast was Puck Daddy writer Greg Wyshynski, and he talked about how the Jets almost got a pass from, when you look at the series, they just got swept. And in the last game four, they got their ass kicked by the Anaheim Ducks. And I didn't see a single criticism. All I saw was, you know who the real fit winners were? The fans. And, like, they named the fans the third star of the game last night. And it's just ticky-tack crap like that. You know what? I respect the Jets. There's a lot of players on the Jets I like. I know that they had a little bit of a tumultuous season. I know they had the drama with the Evander Kane trade, and they seem to have bounced back from it. But in all honesty, I mean, this love fest has to stop. I mean, for what many people call the best sports venue in North America, for everyone saying how great the Jets fans were, they didn't do that great on their home ice in the postseason. For your first home games in 20 years, you're still going to be waiting for that first home win, so whatever. I thought that for a team that we made so much of a deal to make the playoffs, and we thought that they were going to be that real surprise coming out of the West that no one wanted to face, I thought they just flatlined once they got back to Manitoba. And I can tell you this, the LA Kings wouldn't have done that. There's no way the LA Kings roll over and get swept, but whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I understand your points, but I love my Jets, and that's an amazing team, one of my favorite teams to watch this year. And I think I saw some stats that they had 8 injured players, like with severe injuries, that played. So it looks like that came into play in this series. But let's move on to something more important, the Montreal Canadiens sadly losing last night. But I'm not that mad, you know. I'm a little happy because we get another extra day of Habs hockey instead of having to wait a week. I want to hear your opinions on this series. Do the Sens have a chance, do you think Friday, like I do, will be the last day of the Sens' miracle run?
I forget where I saw the tweet last night, but someone made the joke about how because the Habs lost tonight, now they're about to make an extra $5 million in ticket revenue for Game 5, so let's float that conspiracy theory out there.
Very true.
But no, in all... But in all honesty, though, I thought yesterday's game was really good. I enjoyed the first two periods. You know, the Sens really came on strong in the third. They knew that their season was 10 minutes away from being over, 15 minutes away from being over, and they put up a good effort. And Mike Hoffman scores the goal to break to take the lead. All but four Senators, Borowicki, Condra, Lazar, and Pigot, were in positive possession. So nearly everybody on the team had positive Corsi. They were very good throughout the game. They played a structured game and had possession, but obviously Carey Price is one of the best goaltenders in the world. But I think it was an example. It was a prototypical Montreal Canadiens game in the sense that Carey Price makes a lot of big saves, keeps them in the game the entire time, but the Habs just weren't able to generate offense. And, you know, I still think they're going to close out the series. I don't see the Sens coming back. I don't see any team down 3-0 coming back against Carey Price. But, you know, for the next round and for later in this postseason, the Montreal Canadiens can't play games like that where they constantly get outshot and they're in a position where if Carey Price doesn't play perfect, they don't get the win.
Well, welcome to the Montreal Canadiens season. That's what it feels like as a fan, you know. I think we've just got accustomed to seeing Carey Price win a series, which, you know what, to be honest, he hasn't done much this series. Except last night, I'll admit that he kept that team in there. But same with Craig Anderson. I mean, that was probably the best thing the Ottawa Senators have done, putting him back in the net. I mean, he has had Montreal's numbers since 2013 when he took that series away from them. And, you know, a lot of people don't like Craig Anderson, and he gets injured a lot, and he had a bruised hand, and he was out a couple months from that, and he still said, oh, yeah, well, I don't know how I'm going to be able to play with a bruised leg. Or bruised hand when people are playing with broken legs and broken arms. So media in Ottawa lost a lot of respect for him. But the guy, he's taken over this team right now. He's really brought this – he gave that win to them last night because there were for sure chances that Montreal could have won. That game could have gone to any team, like every other game it seems like in this series. But I agree, the Montreal Canadiens will win Friday. Carey Price is going to be on spot. The team's going to be playing in front of their home crowd, ready to win. And they'll be waiting for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Oh, wait. Sorry, it might be the Detroit Red Wings.
Oh, it could be. It could be the Red Wings currently up 2-1 on this series. One more point about Anderson before we make the switch. Only given up one goal on 77 shots. He's been terrific for Ottawa. And, you know, if I'll say this. If they can take Game 5 in Montreal, you better hope the Habs win Game 6 because I always love game sevens after a team went up 3-1 because you don't know what's going to happen. So I think the Habs would try to close that out on Friday. Like you were saying, though, the Tampa Bay Lightning, the Detroit Red Wings play tonight. Red Wings are up 2-1 in the series, but it's felt like Tampa Bay's outplayed them for the most part. Detroit's been getting some great goaltending from Peter Mrazek. He's only given up 6 goals in the 3 games he's played, obviously with the shutout in game 3. But you know what, though? The Lightning have 55.3% in the shot attempt total. That's incredible. That's a really strong number. So the fact that Detroit's been able to get these 2 wins in the first 3 games, and not to mention if they can get a win tonight, being up 3-1 against Tampa, that's a tough hole to be in, just ask the Ottawa Senators. So I think it's going to be a good game tonight, but what are your thoughts on the Wings and the Lightning?
To be honest, it's one of those series that I haven't really got into because there hasn't been much of a storyline there, which I think it changes today. You would think it would be a very fast-paced series with 2 fast teams, but it's been very defensive structured. But it really is Mike Babcock out-coaching John Cooper, and both coaches are probably top 5. Babcock, for sure, top 3 in the NHL. But it's really showing that the Detroit Red Wings team is much better than we all thought. Peter Mrazek has been a star, and it's a good story. You know, a lot of people that watched him in the juniors thought that he was going to be the star, and I think it's just kind of a quiet name that no one really knew about. So that's why everyone's so surprised with how well he's doing.
It's you got to love the rookie goaltenders in the playoffs, man. Rookie goaltenders are the most interesting thing. My one point, this will be my last point, and by the way, within the next 5 minutes, we should be expecting Jimmy Murphy, who we were scheduled to have on for Tuesday's show, but unfortunately, a little bit of miscommunication there, so he'll come on in the next 5 or 6 minutes. My last point on the Lightning, though, Hedman and Stralman are still one of the best D pairs in the league. I mean, these two have really been the rocks for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now, no one gives enough credit. There was so much made about Giordano and Brody, and Keith Seabrook. These are sort of the typical conversation starters, but Hedman and Stallman have been lights out for them. And on the other side, too, Zidlicky and Quincy have given quality minutes for the Red Wings. It seems to me that that Zidlicky deal ended up being a good move in Detroit's behalf. Your final thoughts on that before we move on to whatever series we come up with?
Well, Zidlicky, oh my God, I can't even say the name, has for sure done well with that team. He's fit in perfectly right when he came there. I think his first game he scored the OT winner or game-winning goal, one of those things. And yes, I'm excited for the series tonight. You know, this is going to be one of the biggest games because if Detroit wins it, I got to give the series to them. So it'll be up 3-1. But if Tampa wins it, well, we got a series again. And it's, I think tonight will be the official start of a fun watching series because there are a lot of storylines coming into this game. And I don't really know who's going to win this one. So it's for sure going to be an exciting one.
I just hope that if Tampa Bay does end up losing the series and it turns out to be one of those things where Mrazek just got hot for 2 weeks and it teamed out. It just happens in hockey sometimes. I hope the Tampa Bay Lightning don't become the next version of the Pittsburgh Penguins, where it's a team filled with skill, and we know that they're very good, and we know they have good players, but whether it's injuries, goaltending, they face a hot team at the wrong time. I hope they don't become that team that gets eliminated in the first or second round, and then we end up diminishing the impact that they really have.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. But if I'm you, you know, you Toronto Maple Leafs fans, you should totally be cheering for Tampa because if Mike Babcock sees the Detroit Red Wings going this huge run with this youthful team, he may want to stay there and carry the torch for the next couple of years and keep it going in Detroit.
You don't think I've known that this whole time? You don't think I've got my Tampa Bay Lightning hat that I picked up in my 2-4 of Bud Light? You don't think I wear that every night? Come on, Chris.
I'm sorry. And you know what? The thing is, probably it's you and every Toronto Maple Leaf fan out there just hoping a miracle will happen. I don't even want to talk about McDavid because.
I'm the only person who wants Tampa to take this series.
Yeah, yeah. So, you Leafs fans, you know, I feel bad for you. You guys lost McDavid. I don't know if you saw the statistics, but I think you guys, like, with the last ball coming in, you guys had a 70% chance of getting him. So, I feel bad for you, Leafs fans, but I'm a little too busy because I'm watching my team in the playoffs.
We might not even make it past the second round. But speaking of teams that could be going to the second round, one could be the Calgary Flames as they face the Vancouver Canucks tonight. Flames are up 3-1 in that series. And there's a lot of intriguing storylines that we've already been talking a little bit just in case the Flames win this series. What I'm really excited to see is if the Flames face the Ducks in the next round and Jonas Hiller against his former team. But right now, let's look at the present. Hiller's been really good for the Flames right now in this series. 938 with a 1.79 goals against. The trio of Weidman, Brody, and Russell have been they've been a pillar on the Flames' blue line. And I think the key thing, and Travis Yost of TSN wrote a piece today about how Calgary's plan was to essentially contain the Sedin brothers, who right now their possession numbers are in the 70s. I mean, they're sheerly ridiculous right now. Even in the mid-30s, they're still two of the best in the league. But their plan was to contain the Sedins and then just destroy Vancouver's lack of depth. And as much as the Sedins have done a pretty good job of trying to create offense and try to create chances for themselves, it's been Calgary's depth guys of Matt Stajan, who, you know, at age 31 has really settled comfortably in Calgary's bottom six. They've done a really good job of neutralizing Vancouver's lack of depth, and it's going to end up where if the Flames take it tonight, they're going to move on to the second round, and we're talking about a team that all the metrics said should have made the playoffs, and for the entire year, they were just relying on these ridiculous comebacks and somehow squeezing them into playoffs.
And this Calgary Flame team is just defying the odds every night. I mean, I had them beating the Vancouver Canucks in seven games, but they've really dominated. Like, they have – this team is a fast, gritty team that won't give up and has one of the best first lines in the NHL. Like you said, Jonas Hiller, he's coming back if they do get past the Vancouver Canucks, which I think they will. A lot of people are saying the Anaheim Ducks have the easiest way to get to the Cup or at least to the finals. I don't think so. if this Flames team gets up there, they're driving a wave of momentum that is going to gain much more if they beat this Vancouver team. And it's going to be a fun series between those two teams because they both have there's certain elements that make them unique.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. And I'm really excited for it. And I think tonight's going to be a good game, too. I think we're going to see a desperate Canucks team, and I'm expecting big things. But we'll see. Another interesting thing, too, is going to be Eddie Lack or Ryan Miller that gets the start. I believe Miller is the confirmed starter, but I don't know. Lack didn't look too good in that last game. Miller made 15 shots in relief. Another weird thing, too, Vancouver had 63% possession in that game. Like, they really were the better team in Game 3. And I feel like at certain points in the series, they've been the better team, but just hasn't worked out. We're just waiting for Jimmy Murphy right now. He's going to come on and talk to us a little bit about the Boston Bruins. He's a Bruin. More focuses on Boston sports. Talk to him a little bit about that. Some rumors that Peter Chiarelli could be hired by the Edmonton Oilers following his departure from the Boston Bruins. In the meantime, before we get to that, one more thing. Caps and Islanders tonight. That series is tied at 2-2. You know what? Throughout the series, it's been relatively even. Halak and Holtby have been great. They've had their flashes where it hasn't been so great, but for the most part, they've been good. Oh, you know what? I think we're joined by a man who likes to talk about hockey and the Bruins and everything, and he's on the Hockey Guys podcast right now, Jimmy Murphy. Jimmy, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Not too bad.
Pretty good.
Jimmy, I'm going to ask you a few Bruins questions, and it was an interesting season for the Bruins in the most part. Missed the playoffs for the first time in God knows how long. They end up firing Peter Chiarelli at the end of the season. What was your general take on how the Bruins did so far this year, and were they a team that should have been in the playoffs near the end, or was this sort of a wake-up call to the organization that the things they've been doing aren't working anymore?
And I think that wake-up call is going to come in the coming months and in the coming years when they realize that they made a gigantic mistake firing Peter Chiarelli. You know, I think right now you look at this team, yeah, did he make some mistakes handling the cap? Yeah, so did 29 other GMs, you know. And I think that, unfortunately, the mainstream media and a lot of mainstream fans, especially specifically in Boston, just look at it like this is a PlayStation or Xbox game, and, you know, this is like NHL 94, and you can just trade for whoever you want and get rid of all your luggage and your garbage players. And it's not that easy. And I think considering how difficult it is to manage a team under the cap, if you look at Peter Chiarelli's body of work, I literally think that the Bruins really, you know, I'm going to refrain from some language here, but I mean, they messed up big time. They're going to really regret this day. And I think that right now you're seeing a team that gave in to a lot of scrutiny around their city from the media and the fans and listened to the fans and the media instead of listening to hockey minds around the NHL and people that really know what's going on in the game. And those people are laughing at them right now, and they're going to regret this.
Hey, Jimmy, Chris here. So, yeah, it was an off season for the Bruins. You know, they're of course, you're going to blame it on someone because they need that for their fan base. Is this going to be a rebuild or a retool this off season? And, you know, they've got some great players still, but we're also seeing some of their great players are getting older. What do you think they'll do with this team?
Well, that's where I'm wondering what the Bruins – you'd have to ask them that because I'm wondering what their plan is too. I mean, you know, on one hand, they tell – they go out and they threaten the management and coaching staff and the players, but of course the players never get held accountable, unfortunately, in pro sports. But they go out and they threaten them in January and, you know, basically say they're going to roll if we don't make the playoffs and make a good run towards the cup. And yet at the same time, in the press conference announcing the firing of Peter Chiarelli, they're trying to throw Chiarelli under the bus, saying he was not looking towards the future and was only thinking of now, and that they had to step in and preserve draft picks and not let him trade away picks. Well, if you're the GM, what are you supposed to do when your bosses come out and say, if you don't make the playoffs, you're gone? Are you supposed to think of the now or the future? As far as I know, from all my sources within the Bruins organization, Chiarelli was doing a good job at doing both. And, you know, there were times when Cam Neely stepped in and overruled or suggested things and really interfered with what they claimed was complete autonomy, but it wasn't. So I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know what they're up to. I don't know what their direction is right now. And I don't think they do either. I think what Chiarelli was doing was retooling on the fly like a good GM does, you know, like we see the Detroit Red Wings do every year. You know, you can go look at the Red Wings. How many times have people written off the Red Wings? And do you see them getting rid of Ken Holland? And where are they right now? So, you know, I think right now that the hierarchy of the Boston Bruins has to look in the mirror and really say they can't go back and rehire Chiarelli, but they have to wonder, what are we doing right now, and are we going in the right direction? Because it's all going to trickle down if they don't figure it out.
Lots of good stuff there. This is Jimmy Murphy on the Hockey Guys podcast. You can follow Jimmy at Murphy's Law 74. Jim, one thing that bothered me about the Boston Bruins this year, and I find that as much as Chiarelli took a lot of heat this offseason and ended up being fired, I don't think that, as much as I like Claude Julien as a coach, I don't feel like he got enough heat for the fact that Patrice Bergeron, who in this generation, since advanced stats have been kept track of, he's arguably one of the best possession players since it's been kept track, yet he had less even strength ice time than, listen to this, David Krejci, Carl Soderberg, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Louis Eriksson, and essentially the entire defensive core. How does Patrice Bergeron, who just got nominated for his zillionth Selke trophy, why was he not deployed enough, and why was he not used enough for a Bruins team that for a good chunk of the season was fighting for a playoff spot?
You know, that's a good question. I think, you know, look, I'm not going to say that Claude Julien did a horrible job. I mean, you think about all the injuries they had and having a trade happen right before the season and having to adapt to that. Like, as you've gone through training camp, you think you have the roster you have, and what was it, 2 days before the season starts, you're trading away a key defenseman like Johnny Boychuk. But, you know, there's a lot of adapting to be done through a season. Is what has to, the way the game is going, who knows? And I think that Julien at times, I think he tried. I'm not going to say he didn't try to adapt, but I think sometimes, and he's shown this in the past, where he doesn't have the patience to stick with changes and to keep trying changes. And, you know, I think he has a tendency, and, I think he's a great coach, like I said. I think he's one of the best coaches of our generation. By no means do I think he should pay the price and be fired here, though it's probably likely it might happen. We'll see. But I think that he needed to act a little better, and I'm with you on that. He could have utilized Bergeron better. He could have utilized a lot of guys better. But if there's one thing that he struggled with throughout his career, at times it's been stubbornness. And that's helped him win, but it's also helped him lose.
Stubbornness has killed every coach in the sport. Chris, go ahead and ask your question, sorry.
It's funny that you say that, like, he's known for stubbornness and that's his issue, because it seems like that was the problem in Montreal when he left. But,
that's a good point.
And no one knows what's going to happen with Claude Julien until a general manager comes in. But do we know who the candidates are for the general manager position? I know there's a lot of talks internally, but what do you think is the best way, and who's most likely candidate to get the job?
Well, I mean, you know, I've already tweeted out there. I've been told by numerous sources that this job has already been offered to Don Sweeney. And it's Don Sweeney's job if he wants it. He has not given them an answer yet. They are looking outside as well as a backup plan. But, I mean, from what I understand from sources within and outside the organization, Don Sweeney is the guy that Cam Neely wants in place there. They have a long history, both on the ice and off the ice, good friends, good teammates, and now, of course, they've worked together in the front office there. You know, people say, well, wasn't Sweeney a Harvard guy and a Chiarelli guy? Well, yeah, he was a Harvard guy and a Chiarelli guy, but he also has a much deeper friendship with Cam Neely. And it's very evident right now. I mean, Cam Neely might not say it, he might not admit, but if you read between the lines, a lot of this was about power struggles. A lot of this is that Neely wants his own guys in place. He wants more of a say, and that's fine. He has the right to. He's the president. But I don't appreciate the dancing around and the hiding behind that and not just coming right out and saying it, because he has every right to do it. He's the president of the team, and Well, he's the GM's boss. If you're going to go out there and try and say this is how our organization is running, we're giving our GM complete autonomy, well, that's just not so. I know that for a fact. And, you know, I think right now Don Sweeney is the guy, but if they go to outside candidates, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how those candidates perceive what has gone on there and if they want that job. Do they want to deal? I mean, are they willing to come in and have the guy looking over his shoulder every second? And look, that's who's right. Like I said, I'm not criticizing Nealon for wanting to run the organization that way, but don't say you're not going to and then do it.
Last question, Jimmy, and we thank you for coming on. We appreciate it. This is Jimmy Murphy. For so long, it seemed like the Boston Bruins were the elite team of the Eastern Conference, and every year they seemed like they were going to go on some sort of Stanley Cup run. And for a while, it seemed like, you know, the top teams in the Western Conference and then Boston. But now they've taken a little bit of a step back, and we've seen the emergence of teams like the New York Rangers, the Montreal Canadiens, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Who in the Eastern Conference do you see as one of the heavy – or as some of the heavy hitters? And are the Bruins still in that sort of conversation in the general sense, or are they now taking a step back and they got to wait their turn before they can be at the top of the conference?
You know, because I think the Bruins are, I mean, they're obviously not in it, right, as we're talking, right, because they're sitting home or they're on a golf course while others play playoff hockey. They're not in it right now, but I don't think they're that far off. I don't think this is going to be something where, you know, you got to wait 3 to 5 years for them to become a contender again. Look, if they stay healthy and they bring back even the team they have right now, you know, I think they can be a contender right away. I mean, that's a good team when healthy. That's a good team when they want to play their game and they want to give an effort. I think there was a lack of effort from a lot of players there. And you talk about some of the players getting older. Yeah, I could see that with a Char and stuff. But really, I mean, if you look at the core of this team, you know, guys, I'm 40. You're making me feel like a grandfather here. If you think, you know, late 20s and early 30s is old. I mean, a lot of these guys are entering their prime, you know, and I don't think they're old at all. I think they just need to look themselves in the mirror right now and say, do we want to go win another cup? And they need to stop resting on the laurels of winning the cup in 2011 or making it there in 2013. They need to adapt as well, realize that the parity is growing every year in its NHL right now under the cap. It's going to keep changing. We're going to keep seeing teams making the playoffs that we never thought would even sniff the playoffs. I'm telling you right now, I'm going on record right now, and you guys can keep this and we'll talk about it next year. The Florida Panthers are going to make the playoffs the next 3 years, if not
yes,
more.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Okay. Bandwagon. Yep.
All right, and you get on that bandwagon now, and there's more teams like that are going to turn it around. You look at the Coyotes right now. Yeah, they stink, but you know what? I could see them in the playoffs in 2 to 3 years, depending on how they draft this year. I mean, it's not that hard to flip it around and get going again. So in terms of the Bruins, they have the foundation in place. I do think they need some tweaks, though. I think they really need to identify who are the sourest there, who are the malcontents, you know, and one of those guys they're going to be focusing on right now in the offseason on whether to let go, because he's also coming up on a contract here next year, is Milan Lucic. And you got it. The longer you wait, if you don't want him, if you don't identify him as part of that core going forward over the next 4 years, and you want to trade, you better trade him now. Because if you wait and wait and wait until you're up at the deadline, he's a rental, you're not going to get as much. And that's why I don't understand the whole stuff with, you know, everybody bashing Peter Chiarelli about when he traded Boychuk, saying, oh, we could have kept him to the trade deadline. Really? You really think you could have got a lot? I think he got a pretty good return. Now, he wasted it, I think, on Brett Connolly at the end. I thought that was a bad move. But
oh,
other things
such a bad move.
Yeah, that's a deep draft he got coming up, and I think that was a pretty good haul he got back. I mean, yeah, he knows, but Boychuk told him, and nobody will come out and say this. Boychuk told the Bruins, and his agent told him, they were going to test the market. So there you go. I mean, they knew he was leaving, so why not get something?
You're exactly right. Jimmy Murphy, he's written for NESN, he's written for ESPN Boston, he's written for XN Sports, and he just joined us on the Hockey Guys podcast. Thank you for coming on, Jimmy. You can follow Jimmy at Murphy's Law 74. Chris, 30 seconds left. We got Tampa, Detroit, Islanders, Caps, Hawks and Preds, Canucks and Flames. Who are your four winners? Go.
Here we go. Tampa, Chicago, Islanders, and Calgary Flames are going farther in the playoffs, boys.
I'm going to tell you, it's going to be Lightning, Caps, Preds, Flames. Canucks are out. This is the Hockey Guys podcast. Thanks for listening. Tune in on Monday. See you, folks.